Hold on to what he was saying, Nikki. I'm a Krishna Chaitanya Prabhunityananda Sri Daita Ganan Harshavasini Gobaktavindaki. All glories to the sum of devotees. All glories to the sum of devotees. All glories to the sum of devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 25, The Glories of Devotional Service, Text Number 28. Devotevacha. Kachitvaya uchita bhakti.
Kachitvaya uchita bhakti.
Kidrisi mama gochara. Kidrisi mama gochara. Kaya param te nirvatnam.
Kaya param te nirvanam.
Agyan, agyasan, vasinavaham. Anjasan, anjasan, vasnavaham. Devahutirvacha. Kachitvaya chitayuchita bhakti. Kedrishi mama gochara.
Kedrishi mama gochara.
Kaya param te nirvanam.
Kaya param te nirvanam.
Anjasan vasnava aham.
Anjasan vasnava aham.
Devahutir vacha.
Devahutir vacha.
Achit taya uchita bhakti. Kidrishi mama gochara.
Kidrishi mama gochara.
Kaya param te nirvanam.
Kaya param te nirvanam.
Anjasan vasnivaham.
Anjasan vasnivaham. Kachitvai uchita bhakti.
Kachitvai uchita bhakti. Kidrishi mama gochara.
Kaya param te nirvanam.
Kaya param te nirvanam.
Anjasan vasnavaham.
Anjasan vasnavaham. Devotir vacha. Achetvayuchita bhakti. Ya param te nirvanam. Jasanam. Devo tirvacha. Kachitvai chita bhakti. Kedrishi mama gochara. Ya param te nirvanam. Anjasan vasnavam. Devahuti uvacha.
Devahuti said.
Kachit.
What?
Tvai.
Unto you.
Uchita.
Proper.
Bhakti,
devotional service.
Kidrishi,
what kind?
Mama, by me.
Gochara.
Yet to be practiced.
Yayang.
By which. Param.
Feet.
Te. Your. Nirvanam.
Liberation.
Anjasa.
Immediately.
Anvashnavai shall attain.
Aham.
I. Translation. On hearing this statement of the Lord, Devahuti inquired, "What kind of devotional service is worth developing and practicing to help me easily and immediately attain the service of your lotus feet?" Please repeat. On hearing this statement of the Lord, Devahuti inquired, "What kind of devotional service is worth developing and practicing?
What kind of devotional service is worth developing and practicing?
To help me easily and immediately attain the service of your lotus feet."
To help me easily and immediately attain the service of your
lotus feet. Purport. It is said in the Bhagavad Gita that no one is barred from rendering service to the Lord. Whether one is a woman or a laborer or a merchant, if he engages himself in devotional service of the Lord, he is promoted to the highest perfectional state and goes home back to Godhead. The devotional service most suitable for different types of devotees is determined and fixed by the mercy of the spiritual master. Omayana tamananda shakananchana salakaya chakshun militamina tasma shigarave namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhisam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dharati Swapanatikam. Devahuti is inquiring about different, about which kind of devotional service she should execute. Of course, we understand there's different kinds. There's Gyan, Yoga, and Bhakti. And so she's inquiring which of these three is the path that you're recommending for me. In order to easily and immediately attain the service of your lotus feet. So, the idea is that the devotional service should produce some immediate result. Not that one labors for nothing without getting some result. The result must be there if we are performing bhakti yoga properly, because it is a science. Science means you make the experiment properly, you get the proper result. So the science of bhakti yoga is given by the acharyas. They tell us what to do, what not to do, what to avoid, what to accept. And if we follow carefully, we are sure to quickly get the result. It seems sometimes that we do not understand actually what the proper result of devotional service is, because we see that many of our members of our society, they do not appear to be getting the result, at the same time do not seem to be changing their approach. This is very unfortunate. We have a very powerful process of spiritual realization. And if we apply it properly, we can very quickly come to that stage of complete freedom. That stage means freedom from hankering and lamenting, freedom from lust, envy, and greed. This is real freedom. And that freedom can be attained by the practice of devotional service. Still, it seems that many of us, we remain content to stay within the confines of hankering and lamenting, or having some little bit of sense gratification along with our devotional service. It appears at times that we are following the modern version of dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. Now, formerly, the process of self-realization was given in that way. That one should do their dharma, and by doing their dharma, they would be allowed to have some sense gratification. Prabhupada was stating this in the purport to text 26. In all scriptures, people are encouraged to act in a pious way so that they can enjoy sense gratification not only in this life but also in the next. So this is dharma artha kama moksha. That we do our dharma and we get some artha, we get some material result. With that artha, we can have some kama, some material enjoyment. And then at the end of life, it becomes serious about spiritual life, it becomes serious about liberation. And this process of self-realization was changed by Krishna when he spoke Bhagavad Gita. He gave us a different way of practicing spiritual life. This he presents in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, beginning with text 240. After Krishna speaks that we are not the body, he speaks about 20 verses explaining how we are not the body, what the nature of the soul is, and so on. Then he says, thus far I've described to you the knowledge through analytical study. Now listen as I explain how to work without fruitive result. When you act in such knowledge, you can free yourself from the bondage of works. Now before Krishna goes into that topic, he prefaces his remarks with several verses speaking about the Vedas. First he explains that those who are resolute in purpose, those who have a fixed purpose, they don't deviate, they have one aim. They don't do some of this and some of that. They're very fixed in their determination and their purpose. But those whose intelligence is irresolute is many branched. That means they dabble here and there and they can't fix their intelligence on one particular goal. Men of small knowledge are very much attached to the flowery words of the Vedas, which recommend various fruitive activities for elevation to the heavenly planets. Result in good birth, power, and so forth. Being desirous of sense gratification and opulent life, they say that there is nothing more than this. So the traditional method of self-realization given in the Vedas is dharma, artha, kama, moksha, is what Krishna is referring to here. The people become attached to this idea that we're going to do some pious activity, we're going to enjoy, and then we'll, and this is taken as the object of religious practice. But Bhagavatam rejects this kind of religiosity. It calls it Kaitava Dharma, cheating religion, in which one wants to get some result from this spiritual practice. Rather, actual, real religion means to engage 100%, without deviation in the devotional service of the Lord. And this is what Krishna teaches in Bhagavad Gita. Here, in this preface, Krishna goes on to say, in the minds of those who are too attached to sense enjoyment and material opulence and who are bewildered by these things, the resolute determination for devotional service does not take place. So, a person who is attached to this idea that I'm going to enjoy in this world, I want to enjoy this world, they cannot be serious. They don't get the determination for devotional service, because devotional service rejects this idea of sense gratification, sense enjoyment. Now Krishna explains exactly where he's going. He says the Vedas deal mainly with the three modes of material nature. He encourages Arjuna to rise above them, become transcendental to them. And all purposes served by a small well can be served by a great body of water. Similarly, the purpose of the Vedas can be served by one who knows the purpose behind them. So this dharma, artha, kama, moksha, this purpose can be served when one knows that the purpose of the Vedas is to bring one to devotional service to Krishna. And if one can directly approach devotional service of the Lord, one needn't bother with all the corollaries and all the the rules and regulations of the Vedas. That stuff becomes unnecessary. So in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna's actually kicking that out, sarva-dharmam puridyaga, as we were explaining last night, and he's replacing it with what? With his devotional service, directly. So, this point we have to understand, that this idea of trying to enjoy this material world is, practically speaking, it's despicable, compared to the happiness, the freedom, the bliss that's available to us in devotional service. It's incomparable. So we shouldn't give up, we shouldn't abandon the utmost goal, the culmination, the pinnacle of spiritual life, simply for some insignificant sense gratification. So Devahuti is inquiring, what's the best process for me to do? There's different processes that are recommended. What should I do? And this, so Kapila is going to explain this process of devotional service. Of course, this chapter is named the same way, The Glories of Devotional Service. And we would do well to also understand this very carefully, because it seems in our society we are following some modern version of Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha. Only problem is that we don't see that at the end of life, many of them take very seriously the idea of moksha, giving up family life, or even just giving up material life and then going for pilgrimage and so on. We've become content to compromise our devotional service because we live in this materialistic society, and so we live the way the majority of people do. And then we take it that, okay, we add a little Krishna consciousness to this, we come to the temple on Sunday, and we take this as spiritual life. We are cheating ourselves this way. Cheating ourselves. Because we don't get the result. We don't get the freedom from this hankering and lamenting. We don't get the freedom from lust, envy, and greed. Those things are still there. However minimal they might be, they're hovering in the background. And so we spoil the opportunity to become free from this material consciousness. Krishna consciousness means that to give up all of this desire to enjoy this world. That is Krishna's business. Krishna, he is the enjoyer, and we are the servant. As long as we endeavor to try to be the enjoyer, to take Krishna's position as the enjoyer, as a proprietor, or as the dearmost friend, we cannot achieve this transcendental position. So we have to be very careful to see how we are making progress in spiritual life. And if we are not making progress, we must look carefully and see how are we deviating, what are we doing wrong, and then quickly act to make amends, to fix it up, so that we can quickly come to this position, Brahma-bhuta, the beginning of spiritual life. Now, Devahuti, she's very fortunate to have a qualified person to inquire from. She's going to her spiritual master, who happens to be her son, and who happens also to be the manifestation of the Supreme Lord, as Kapila Dev. She's very fortunate to be able to approach a bona fide spiritual master, somebody who's qualified to give her instruction in spiritual life. Prabhupada wanted to establish so many qualified personalities for giving instruction to spiritual life for the fallen conditioned souls of this world. These persons, they are called brahmanas, those who know what the purpose of life is, those who understand the purport of the Shastra, and who act on the purport, or who act on the basis of Shastra, they know what to do, and they follow without voluntarily, by dint of their spiritual intelligence, they follow voluntarily. What we want to establish this, that there's so many qualified spiritual masters, so many qualified devotees to give instruction for spiritual life. We're in a period of transition at this point. We should not take that what we have in our ISKCON society at this point to be the final result, but rather we should understand that things should be developing more and more to come to that complete Krishna culture. In that Krishna culture, there is a qualified spiritual authority among all groups of people, and they take shelter of him by hearing what to do, what not to do. Prabhupada wanted to establish that. But again, even within our society, we haven't yet established this idea. For example, the president or the leader of each temple should be considered as guru for all the people in the area, and they should have the opportunity to approach him to inquire about how to execute their devotional service, just as Devahuti is doing, and just as Prabhupada says here in the commentary that devotional service must be suitable for different types of devotees, and that's determined and fixed by the mercy of the spiritual master. If we don't have some spiritual authority to go to give us guidance, then how do we know what to do? And so we wander sometimes aimlessly without understanding what to do, what not to do. So this we have to understand, to change, to establish a qualified personalities who will give proper direction to society. Because we haven't established this Vanashram culture, we actually don't have our people, our devotees in the proper position. We have brahmanas, we have qualified devotees. Devotees are qualified to be brahmanas, but many times they are also trying to be kshatriyas, or they are not actually given proper relationship or proper position to be able to exercise their transcendental knowledge. In our temples, generally, the president, he is wearing the hat of both brahmana and kshatriya. But this is not proper. A brahmana, by his nature, cannot be a kshatriya. He's not an administrator. But we've combined the two people into one because, generally, of the influence of the dominant culture. If you go, for example, to some company, some organization, you have one leader, and he's overlooking all the affairs of the entire organization. We've applied that same model to our ISKCON society and our temples, and trying to make them function in that way. But in the process, we don't actually have proper brahmanas because they don't have a position from which to act, and neither do we have kshatriyas. The kshatriyas, without having a place within the institution, then what are they left to do? They don't have a place. They have to go engage themselves some other way. Generally, they're doing business. And the brahmana, or the leader of the temple, he's trying to wear both hats. So we actually have to bring all the aspects of this Vanasram culture, to establish proper culture. Then the Brahmanas, they can do the work of the Brahmana, the Kshatriya. He can do the job of administrating, taking care, and looking after the material welfare of others. And then together, everything can go forward much, much better. If you have a machine and you start taking the parts out and you rearrange them, you put them in different places, right? You take a bicycle and you put the handlebars where the pedals should go, and the wheel where the steering, where the handlebars should go, doesn't work very well. So that's kind of what we have. We're hampered. We're stumbling along with the wrong parts in the wrong places, and then trying to make things work. If we want to make things work nicely, we must establish the Vanasram culture. Give the men of ability the proper position from which to exercise their nature. The Brahmanas giving the spiritual direction, the Kshatriyas giving material shelter and welfare, and Vaishyas also organizing the production, productive activities. And then the rest helping in whatever way that they can. So this isn't going to happen by itself. We've had 40 years, more than 40 years in our society. This is not developing simply by itself. It has to be done in a very thoughtful manner by devotees, particularly by the Brahmanas who understand the need for this, and set about to put the places into put all the pieces into their proper place. Prabhupada wanted to create the brahminical class of man because the Brahmanas can create Kshatriyas. That is, find a man of ability, train him to how to do his duty, and then the rest can follow from there. But both Prabhupada writes that both Brahmana and Kshatriya are required. One alone is not sufficient. The Brahmanas alone cannot do everything. They cannot do the work of the Kshatriyas, the Vaishyas, and so on. Everyone needs to be in their position and do their duty. We have developed a culture in our society where it's acceptable for those who have, for the men of ability, to simply be doing business and making some financial contribution. Of course, our temples need financial support, but who is going to then take up their duty other than that? For example, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains that the business, the activity, the proper duty of a Vaishya is agriculture and cow protection. Right? Now, how many of our Vaishyas are actually properly engaged? Practically very few. Because why? They're all doing business. And they say, well, business is the activity of a Vaishya. I'm doing business. Okay. Right? But who's doing the agriculture and cow protection? Which is the basis, the fundamental support for the entire Vedic culture. Nobody's doing that. So, the whole thing's hampered because men with ability are they're not properly engaged in doing their duty. And so we have to understand these points, and we have to act to actually establish the entire Krishna culture. What we have is a beginning. We've got a foothold in the camp of the enemy, all of our temples, in these atheistic, materialistic cities. It's like a foothold that we have, but it's not the complete thing. It's not the complete result. The entire culture needs to be established, and that culture begins with the Brahmanas, but also requires the participation of qualified people to do their duty. When we have proper Kshatriyas, then we can have the Brahmanas doing their duty and giving proper shelter to the praja. Then we can have a situation where the people, all the people, they can come to the Brahman and they can inquire from him, like Devahuti is doing. She's inquiring from her spiritual master, how do I execute devotional service? So this is needed. We have to move in that direction with intelligence, and then understand the goal of establishing the complete Krishna culture. Okay, discussion.
I'm wondering if you want to list off some of the problems that you think that devotees made some comment. I think I asked this yesterday, but I don't think we got to the day of yesterday. You know, what are some kind of common mistakes that devotees make that you've seen? You know, I mean, maybe that might help to address our situation, whatever they may be.
You mean in general?
In
ISKCON?
Yeah, I mean, in your experience in ISKCON, you see many devotees. They're not the name of anybody, but you know, I mean, what have you seen that seem, you know, some kind of common mistakes that devotees make, and you know, therefore they don't make any progress?
Oh. Okay, well, in that regard, in terms of not being able to make progress in spiritual life, we don't follow the path that's chalked out by our acharyas. Our acharyas tell us to live apart from the general mass of people. But we're not doing that. They tell us we should not associate with non-devotees. But if you have a job, you have to associate with those people. And I gave my example the other day. You know, from my own personal experience, I know how insidious and how subtle this influence is. And I've also seen the other side, now that I live in the village, how by living apart from the mass of people, I can see how one actually becomes free from that influence. So these two things, I think, are most significant. And this association is not only in person, but in movies, in television, in media, in the internet. We can associate in so many ways. But our acharyas, they tell us, don't do that. They tell us not to eat food cooked by non-devotees. Basically, if we do what's given in Upadeshamrita, those few things, that will make a big, big difference.
Like Lord Chaitanya also says that one should not look at the face of a person that's not wearing jilap, and if you see that face, you look at the sun. So it's like even the people that are coming into the temple, they're doing their service in the kitchen with no jilap on. Then how can you control your senses to be really kind to them? And oh, why didn't you put your jilap on? Or what do? How do you get these people to wear jilap?
Well, that can be handled easily by establishing a standard that whoever is going to come here, this is what we do. So you can have a standard for the pujari, a standard for anybody who works in the kitchen, and you don't have to excuse that or explain that. This is what we're taught by Prabhupada. This is what Krishna consciousness means. As in an ISKCON temple, this is how we behave. This is what we do. So you simply establish the standard, just like here on the signboard just outside your office, Prabhupada wrote, all devotees, right? So, you know, must abstain, must follow the four regulative principles, must rise for Mangal Arati. Prabhupada, he wrote it in his own hand.
So we need signs everywhere.
Well, sign plus training. That whoever, you can arrange training. So, you know, some periodically, whoever's working in the kitchen, you bring them together and you sit down and you read Prabhupada's instructions and say, okay, we want to please Krishna. The whole point of this temple, everything is done for pleasing the deities, for pleasing Krishna. And there's a process for doing that, which is actually the basis of culture. Bhaktivedya Purna Maharaj, he gives a very wonderful class explaining Varnashram culture, and he begins with this explanation of the basis of culture being to please Krishna. Now some devotees, they are expert in pleasing Krishna according to their various rasa. So you have Nanda and Yasoda, for example, is Vatsalya rasa. And you have, of course, Radharani for Madhurya rasa, and so on. And these devotees, they know exactly what should be done to enhance the rasa, and those things which should be avoided because they spoil the rasa. So this then becomes the basis of the whole culture. What to do and what not to do. Behavior. So this is culture. So in our temples, we should understand that this same idea. The whole point of our activity is to please the deities, to please Krishna. We should never forget that. And then that automatically establishes what are the do's and what are the don'ts. Why? Because this is what pleases Krishna.
I kind of know why I can't convey to people. I know the reasons that I cannot convey to people by good example, because I'm not a good devotee, and they know that I'm not a good devotee, so they don't respect me enough to do it. But I think we just need to put signs everywhere.
Well, it's a matter of preaching. Well, the preaching must be there. That this means that the leader, yourself as the leader, you have to understand what is Prabhupada's instruction in this regard. And so this is what we do. We're not here acting whimsically. There's a culture here that we want to follow. And so we don't just come here with our own idea and just doing our own thing. You know, or doing it the way we would do at home. There's a different standard that Prabhupada gave us. You don't eat in the kitchen. You don't, after you eat, you have to wash your hands. You don't touch anything else.
Can we cook our own meals in the kitchen? Separate from...
Well, that's up to the management. It's not my position to say that. There's nothing wrong with that, I don't think. But, you know, it depends on logistics, probably more than anything else. Anyway, but you know, that's management decision, and that can be either way. It's not fixed.
Seems like we had this problem all along of mixing management with the political activities. I mean, Prabhupada, he didn't want to have to do the management. Of course, in the beginning, he didn't have it. Huh. And at a certain point, he would say, I just want to translate it, and I want you to manage. But then, sometimes people, resign, and you have to take over again. Mm-hmm. But then again, when his successors came, we didn't separate those two. It was always, this was the Zoma Vachari, he was the manager of that area, he became the guru of that area.
Yeah.
And so people approached them improperly, because I could see in France, for example, people didn't go to the spiritual master for spiritual advice. They would say, they would go for what service could they get, what husband and wife could they get. So it really became, and I could see that they, being in a spiritual position, were affected badly by that also.
Yeah.
They didn't want to be put in that position. I mean, really, it's a, everybody suffered because of it.
Yeah. I speak about culture almost constantly because we very unconsciously we mix the two cultures together. And the result of that is that we don't get the benefit of either culture. We don't get the material prosperity that, if you're just focused on material life that you get, and we don't get the spiritual result. So we have to be very clear what is the culture of Krishna consciousness, and we have to be very careful to establish it. First of all, we need to establish this understanding that everybody is not equal. This is a very common idea, especially here in America. Everybody's equal. Well, we're not. Yeah, well, politically everybody gets one vote, so you're equal in that way. But who, anywhere, you take any number of people, any place, and there's no two people that are equal. Huh? And different people, they have different abilities, and particularly the men. Okay, now the ladies, they have their varna also, but that varna is to allow them to help to understand the psychology of their husband, to be able to help him and support him. But the basic duty or the place of woman is to raise children and to protect the culture. But for men, men have different abilities. And The Brahmana cannot be a Kshatriya. The Kshatriya, by his nature, he likes to deal with people, he likes to organize things, to facilitate things, and he can't be a Brahmana. The Brahmana can't be a Kshatriya. But we try to wear both of these hats, and we don't get the result. I think I've become more and more convinced that it's imperative for us to actually establish this within our society. In the famous room conversation, February 14th, 1977, Prabhupada introduced this idea. He said that we should introduce Varnashram into ISKCON, and the devotees who were present there, they were very bewildered. There was Harisari, Satsvarup, and a few others, and they were saying, Prabhupada, we're training them to be Vaishnavas, so how are we going to, train them in Varnashram? They didn't understand. And this actually requires some study, because sometimes when we say Varnashram, we think Varnashram the way Varnashram used to be done. Okay, Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha, for example, and so on. But Varnashram today will be different from Varnashram of yesterday. It cannot be the same. By the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, because the spiritual practice that we have is so powerful, we can achieve the result in one lifetime. We don't have to do this long process. We have a very quick, powerful process of devotional service. So the Varnashram is going to be different than what was done before. But this distinction between a man of different ability, this is important, that the men do their duty. They have to do their duty. If they don't do their duty, practically like today, everybody's just making money. So who's doing their duty? Where's the Kshatriya? Where's that? Who's going to give up their money-making activity to take up their duty? And without that, you can't actually establish a culture. I'm very sensitive to this because I'm trying to establish these village cultures. And most of the devotees that come to participate, they're basically of a Shudra nature. Shudra nature. They're willing to follow. They're willing to work. But there needs to be at least a Vaishya, a man of a Vaishya ability to organize them. Who knows what needs to be done, first, second, third, to engage them. Now, they can do a little bit, but the quality or the scope of their ability is very limited. So I'm looking around, where are the qualified men? And and we don't see them doing their duty in our society. They get a job, they get a business, they're making money, right? And that's acceptable in the culture of ISKCON, because they give some money to the temple. But it's not sufficient. Krishna doesn't say that in Bhagavad Gita. He explains very clearly what is the duty of the different varnas, and they should be taking up their duty following that to establish this Krishna culture. It's imperative. We have to do that.
Vaishnava
is higher than the Brahman. Yes.
Then we're running out of
Brahmins
for the altar.
Again, we don't have the circumstances that facilitates the development or even to maintain the temple. In the early days when we had a lot of single young men and women, actually, they weren't even single. I was looking at this picture when Prabhupada was here in Berkeley. There were so many devotees around, and this temple was full at that time. Right? So, what happened?
They sold the houses, first of all.
Huh?
They sold the houses.
Oh. That was a mistake. Anyway, we know there's a long, sad history. We don't have to go through that again.
It's how to do around a big DBT debt. So Ramesh and I read it under his team and sold all the houses to pay the DBT debt. That's the story.
There's a good idea. There's a facility, and you know how much it costs to live out there? That's
yeah.
People go to work.
Right.
If we had 50 houses, in those days, these houses look like triple or quadrupled in value since those days. In
yeah.
those days, they were like $50,000. Now it's like $500,000.
I know.
Properties along the street. And now these neighbors, they won't even sell it to us. Any devotee tries to sell anything related, even looks like it, like some Indian businessman, they say, no, we don't sell them. They won't even sell the books.
Anyway, what did you?
Will you be just in Ukraine, or will you be establishing villages in America?
Well, there's two devotees after I was speaking at the Festival of Inspiration last week, two devotees who are, want to establish Vanashram culture in Alachua. They came to me, they asked me if I could train them. So, you know, and then another devotee from Brazil also said that he wanted to follow, you know, be trained by me. So maybe there's some, you know, development from that. I'm trying to limit my scope because I have to spend time in these villages. Otherwise, the training isn't carried out properly. I'm looking for, particularly for brahmanas and kshatriyas to train along these ideas, and then, you know, then they can establish different places. So maybe here in America with those devotees, there's a couple of young men there, and maybe in Brazil, we'll see. Oh, you don't need to be strong. Balabhadra's training more girls than men to work with the bulls, actually.
But I was actually thinking, the gopis, the cowherd boys, they worship the cow.
Yeah.
And you see Krishna with his artic training, he's worshiping the cow, putting tila on the cow and chantam on the cow's forehead, worshiping the cows. In America, I've said last night, you should do it, but I know that you're doing something significantly huge, but I do really believe that the laws, there should be someone qualified to work on changing the laws. I mean, I get these things go through my head, and now I'm saying it times, especially when I'm, focusing on it, I get all this inner inspiration. if the laws are worked on, you don't have to be attached to the results, but to the duty. There's certain people who are able to judicially work, know how to, get things going so that it could go up into, so at least people would have, it would be in the media. I looked on the internet, I get a lot of my information on the internet about cow protection, and I see when people are, the devotees who are taking their cows on Harikram and, doing, their devotional service to the cows, the judge just dismisses it, and, they do all kinds of terrible things. They take their cows away and right across the street there's a whole section of cows that are being raised for slaughter. But because they're not in the club, so to speak, they're dicks, but actually it's the foundation of all religious principles. So in order to help the planet, to save Krishna's energy, maybe, who knows, it's up to Krishna. From my understanding, it's our desire, it's our will that what's happening on the planet
And these corporation people, well, they do have a lot of power. They've got armies and like that. But Krishna is more powerful than the armies and the power of the pen and so many things. And just to get it out there so that people, because it's like inspiring to go out and say the time across all the cow papers, and people even who are like, you know, they go, well, I like my meat.
Sahadev, there's one devotee, he's the president of Secunderabad Temple in India. He's written a number of very wonderful books. Have you seen those? No? One of the books is To Kill Cow Means the End of Civilization.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful book.
Is it a pamphlet form?
It's a small book, not very thick.
You
know, you should find Mataji Kalindi, Apoorva's wife, Kalini. She's selling those. She sells a lot of books. So she had them there at New Vrindavan.
Mm-hmm.
So, Kalini.
Apoorva from Denver?
Yeah.
That's
not me. No. Kalini, right?
So she's in New Vrindavan?
No. He's cooking now for MVT. 9 months of the year, and during the hot months they leave and they come back to America and they travel around, and so she's distributing books. So I saw her, she had Sahadev's books, so you should try to find out how to contact her and find out where she got them from. But they're wonderful books. He has two books about cows, one book to kill the cow means the end of civilization, the other one is about the wonderful cow. And it's a really beautiful little book. They're very, very nicely done. His other books are about peak oil. He was given an honorary PhD for writing this book about peak oil.
Peak oil. Honorary
PhD. Yeah. Peak oil means the oil's running out, it's going to start to decline. We've hit the peak of production now, the production is going to decline. And then he wrote one other one about the end of civilization, something like that. They're very good books for preaching. I think they'd be great here. Anyway, I'd suggest also, you're very passionate about this, you should also write. You know, you can write on the internet, write a blog. He lost his Bhagavad Gita manuscript twice, and so if you lose it, you have to do it again. Just keep writing. It's a lot of work.
Because it's the time.
Well, we know that, Mother. I'm just saying, how are you going to get from talking to doing? That's the point.
Anyway, everybody's not going to do everything. You do your part, and others will do their part.
There's
a lot of these young people. We have one godbrother, Prabhupada Das. He stays near Bellingham. He's very much in Devan Ashram. He goes and he talks to all the punk rockers, all these young kids who are disaffected. They're unhappy with their future, what it appears to be their future. And he's trying to filter from them some who are actually can do something serious to create an alternative other than just complain. So it's a matter of preaching. Right? But you know, so you go out and you do what you can do. Yeah.
There's a young boy going to Chaitanya Charitamrita in Modesto, and he's a farm kid, and he's already, you know, he's got his mind a little bit going in that direction. You need kids to know how to do it, and how to grow land, and take care of animals.
Another very good example is Hare Krishna Das's son, Asto. Well,
Hare Krishna Das is awesome.
Yeah. So her son, you know what her son did?
No, I don't know.
He went. He was getting his degree in economics. He went to the Congo, Republic of Congo in Africa, and started a village project there, which has become very successful, and so successful that the government of, I think, Uruguay in South America asked him to come and do a similar project there. Basically, he went there to this tropical country and he showed people how to grow food. If you can imagine, you know, they live in a tropical country, they didn't know how to organize themselves to grow food. This is why you have to have a Vaishya, at least somebody with some ability, because the people by themselves, they're willing, but nobody would show them simply how to grow food. Other people would come there and they'd make a business and then give them a job. But Asto just showed them, okay, here's how you grow food. And he showed them how to feed themselves. They needed to be shown that. And it's very successful. So he's a wonderful example. You know, there's another young man, and you know, he's raised in Gidanagari. His mother's always talking about these kinds of things, and he went out and he did it. So
my daughter's a member of the Organic Society of Hawaii.
So anyway, we each do what we can do. That's all we can do.
Don't worry, as we're speaking right now, it's happening to you also. Don't be so sad, don't be so
I was thinking we just put those little things that chant Hare Krishna and these lots where the animals are gonna be killed, at least they are getting the holy name.
And also it's a wonderful way to present Krishna, you know, because